The goal of the Salumas podcast is simple. Take a candid, informed, objective, and often comedic approach to the human condition. In keeping with this, the use of expletives, crude humor, and references to harsh realities are commonplace. If you find any of this to be offensive, please throw your listening device in the trash. If not, enjoy the show.
And we are back for another episode of the Salumas Podcast. This is Kalu.
This is Chris.
This is Brandon in the background.
God, I'm so, you know what? I'm so happy that he's here.
I am too.
I'm really happy.
Look, you bring a certain je ne sais quoi to the room.
Go ahead and define what that is.
I don't really know.
I think that's just French for swagger.
It is French for swagger.
Okay, fair enough.
Green-eyed swagger.
Thanks for taking it like seven levels.
But let me ask you a question, Kalu.
Yeah.
Something I've been thinking about, right?
Okay.
Are you one of the good ones?
Let me think about that. Well, I don't have a criminal record.
I do.
I make decent money.
I don't.
I'm black.
I'm a little bit.
I'm married.
No.
Happily.
Yeah.
I don't do anything wrong. I'm well-spoken. Let's see what else. I coach a football team.
That's wholesome as fuck.
That's very wholesome.
What's their ages?
Huh?
What age group?
Between ages 6 and 8. I try to stay somewhat active in the community. I don't attend any sort of church or anything, but I'll go to anyone's church, especially if you're cooking. I do pretty well meeting parents. What else?
Do you have any babies?
No, none of my own. None of my own. Just animals. I did rescue one from the Humane Society.
What type?
It is a pit bull.
You rescued a pit bull?
I did. I really did, guys.
Yeah. What's his name?
His name is Ernie.
Aww.
Super non-threatening.
Aww. You know what I mean? And does he have a brother?
He does have a brother.
And what kind of dog is that?
That is a golden retriever.
And his name is?
Bert.
So their names are?
Bert and Ernie. Yes. Oh, and yes, owning a golden retriever is like having a very expensive ottoman, as you said.
It's like a living ottoman running around your house.
It's just a really, really expensive ottoman. So I'd say so. Why do you ask?
Well, you know, I was just thinking, and you know, that brings us to our topic today.
Oh, yeah. One of the good ones. Okay. Yeah. So, Brandon, that's something that we didn't tell you today. Well, I think we did when you were coming in. So you're actually in on this episode now. So.
Oh, you just put me on the spot.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. No, you're here.
Yeah, you're 100% invested. You're our guest today, basically.
I'm just going to go ahead and turn my mic down.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the good ones.
Okay. Well, where I was coming from with it was, you know, you and I sit around and joke about any number of things. And you often in this caricature of a voice, you'll be like, oh yeah, Kalu, he's all right, he's one of the good ones.
Yeah.
And that's reflective of something. That didn't just materialize out of thin air.
That is true.
Excuse me. And then I was thinking about the implications of it, and the first two things that came to mind were novel status within a social group and a given context, or tokenism.
Yes.
Now, what is the definition of tokenism? Does somebody have that on hand by chance?
Brandon, look it up real quick. Brandon, we're waiting for you.
God, sorry.
We're waiting
God
for you.
God damn it. You know who isn't one of the good ones?
Brandon's not one of the good ones. He has green eyes, and you just never trust anyone with green eyes.
I know. I always count my silverware when he leaves.
Brandon is a spoon stealer. I mean, he really is. Don't worry. I looked it up if you haven't.
Good. Go ahead.
No, okay. It's time for you to read. I see it on your phone. Anyway, I literally see it on your phone.
I'm a big forker anyway. I don't steal spoons.
Well, what's the definition? Read it to us.
I don't have it.
Oh, my God. You got it. Anyway, tokenism is described or defined as the following. The practice of making only a perfunctory or symbolic effort to do a particular thing, especially by recruiting a small number of people from an underrepresented group in order to give the appearance of sexual or racial equality within a workforce. There are quite a few definitions floating around out there, but the one that I'm reading hits the nail on the head pretty decently for the type of discussion that I think we're going to have.
Well, and that's where I was going to come from, was that there isn't one specific definition. So essentially, we kind of have a little bit of leeway to create our own working definitions of novel status within a social group and tokenism. Mm-hmm. And to me, off the top of my head, one of the differences is, and it's, I don't think the two things are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
I think you could represent something that is novel and is appreciated for its novelty within a given context and also ascribe to that token status as well. But overwhelmingly, I think tokenism has an objectification element of it.
I believe so. I truly believe so.
So in your professional and we can go into personal life as well, but in your professional life, how do you feel like these two concepts have affected you?
Well, it is definitely interesting going into an area. I've said it before on multiple episodes where I'm pleasantly surprised when I'm out in rural Kentucky and I'm, you know, selling something or going into a business for the first time and they see this big, giant, 6'5" black dude, right? And so, and then when I speak, it's completely different, you know? It's like, whoa, this is, now he's truly a
rare. He speaks better English than I do.
He's truly a rare specimen. It's definitely something that that plays a part in my professional life. I have one example. I spoke at a chamber event during the holiday season last year. And it was a speech that I gave in front of maybe like 500 people or so. So I talked about all this stuff going on with the offerings that we had and a couple other things. And then afterwards, there were some older African-Americans that had lived in the community, you know, way longer than I've ever been alive, right? And they came up to me and they were just like, it's so good to see someone that speaks like you. You know, some woman said, he speaks the King's English when he talks. And I was just like, wow, this is definitely... definitely interesting that someone would really go for it and say something like that. But then also,
and that's the definition of novel status.
That's the definition, yeah, of novel status right there. And it was kind of weird at first, but you think of all the different stuff just historically, and if you have lived in a certain environment with a certain expectation or certain standard or something like that, and something else kind of comes in there like me, and I'm not like bragging or anything like that. It's just they were used to something different, and I came in there.
Well, and there's an inventory to be taken, too.
Sure, absolutely.
It's on the basis of, like, 6, 7... I mean, any number of things intersecting.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I mean, skin color, size.
Yes.
The fact that you're 6'5" alone, and we've talked about it before, that being a spectacle of a human being in any number of senses transcends certain other social things.
Yes, absolutely. And, it was very different. I was able to get used to it kind of quick, you know, because I've sort of heard that same thing throughout my life and throughout my professional life, to the point of it, when my first like real full-time job with like a staff, there was just a running joke, right? How I was the black guy in there, and you know, that we would joke on the way I talked and everything like that. But yeah, it was definitely something. And in my team of people that I worked with, we had someone that literally represented every nationality. So we would just joke around how we were like the League of Nations or something like that. And every one of us was the token this, you know what I'm saying? Was the novel Asian, the novel, you know, Latin American or anything like that. So we had all that stuff going for us. And then we even had a British guy in there. And so it made the jokes, the horribly offensive jokes, really easy. It made that on a professional level. But yeah, we had a good time. And that, but you know what? It makes me also think of this, women who know sports very, very well. I think of,
cause I don't like, I
don't. Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, like I'm very conventionally like into dude shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sports, like I just really don't give a fuck about that kind of stuff.
He's into dude shit.
Yeah, damn. And he likes having it showered on him.
Damn, Brandon.
Yeah.
Brandon gonna do me like that? Yeah, I hate to have to whoop your ass, Brandon.
That would be bad, Brandon. That would be really bad. But yeah, I definitely think of women that just are incredibly knowledgeable about sports. If you look at like ESPN, there's all sorts of female anchors and stuff like that on there. And it's just like, holy shit, just thinking of them walking into a room or into a bar and knowing more than every single person in there, is the word tokenized? Is that the thing?
And that's the thing, is that those things are very much intrinsically tied. Yes. I think a lot of times they overlap mm-hmm. extensively. And you can be within the same context, even talking to the same person, and then possess a perspective of you that really represents tokenism and also represents your novel status in their life.
Absolutely.
Because that tokenistic viewpoint, again, to me, the working definition would entail being objectified to some degree.
Oh, yeah. excuse me. I would think that there's a level of being able to objectify someone who's in there. And now it makes me think of groups of friends where it's a bunch of guys and then there's one girl in there.
Right.
Or two girls. And then they just recognize the girl as, oh, she's just one of the guys. But I think that there is some objectification that happens within that group of people. And yes, it's like joking around and stuff like that. But I think that later on it leads to other things that are otherwise deemed unacceptable in, doing my air quotes, normal social groups.
Well, and I think that there's something to be said from the transition from the micro interaction of you to that one individual
mm-hmm.
and how they view you to the exponential growth of, if you were to take someone similar demographically to that individual, especially if they outnumber you substantially, what is the net impact of that view exponentially increased? Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. again, on the one-to-one, you interacting with someone and then possessing tokenistic viewpoints of you isn't necessarily an inherently toxic thing, because people really just frame things up a lot of times in terms of their own personal narratives.
Exactly. So, and it's being able to have that, it gives you a little bit of what we were talking about earlier before we recorded, social capital.
You
do end up having some when you have that awareness that that other person views you as the token female or the token black guy or the token Asian or whatever. When you know that they think that, I think it does give you a little bit more leeway or, again, and social capital.
And do you play that role, too? Does it reciprocate? Yeah. You really, like, you wear that shit around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from my personal experience, like, growing up ambiguous, there's kind of the absence of it. I mean, I don't know what it's like to be considered the default.
Yeah.
And there's a lack of a better term there, but I don't know what it's like to be considered that, but at the same time, I do know what it's like to be considered kind of a outlier to a degree. Like, I have the absence of an identity because of not really fitting into any particular label that's associated with it. The only thing I could think of that translates into, and I don't really think I contend with token status as much necessarily, but being a male in an overwhelmingly female field, like social work, it's a necessary thing because you need males to do drug screens for other males. And mm-hmm. there's a lot, we deal with a lot of males. So there's that element. There's the utility element whereby, I'll say me personally, I get used for things that wouldn't be asked of another mental health professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going and picking up heavy things or escorting people to dangerous places or things that are directly linked to probably me being male, and then also the fact that I'm kind of physically capable on top of that.
Yeah.
That novel status in there. But if you, I've contended with recently, like, people think that since I am capable of those things, that those are inherently my duties.
Yes.
When in reality, it's something I'm picking up and doing extra, but they think because you're capable of it, and it seems to coincide with who you are to them and their little narrative, they're going to be like, well, I need the sofa delivered. Well,
yeah,
let me tell you something. I don't deliver sofas for a living, pimp.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a case manager. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what I do. If I have the extra time, then I will. But I really don't think that I've had to deal with it or even think about it nearly as much as you have. And
I'll say that you probably have a lot. You understand more your social capital more than anything. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
I think that you probably realize
being
that,
handy.
Yes, you realize that you can go into many groups of people, different types. If it's all women, or if it's all men, or even if it's a bunch of black dudes, you know that you carry some social capital, and you can go in there, and you because you can, you code very well, you know, or you code in however you want, and you can do in that. That act of coding, you can pull it off very well. And it makes you able to...
Will you give them a quick definition of coding again?
Yeah, so for me, I view coding as sort of how you act or how you portray yourself when you're around certain people. So some would tell me that I code white. And some would probably tell Chris that he codes black. Some would probably say that Brandon codes green-eyed. You know what I mean?
He definitely does.
My whole life.
See, there you go. All green-eyed people talk like that. So, and they do green-eyed people stuff, like steal forks. Right? It's like, please and rewind to 1 minute.
Oh, no, I'm old!
But I feel, again, I do feel like you probably understand your capital in that. And I think that that's something that many people who would be recognized as the token this or whatever, whether it's like a female in a male dominated field or anything like that, they probably understand that they might have some social capital in there. There are instances.
And you almost have to play into your tokenism.
Yeah, you sometimes you do have to play into it.
Whereas I don't have to do that. Yeah. Like, I don't have to play into tokenism. If anything, I'm just kind of conforming, I guess, mm-hmm. to the context.
Yeah. And there's so much because I have to play into the tokenism. And Brandon, you can jump in if you want, if you're feeling this too, that there are certain things that I'm not even 100% interested in. But because I know that the person I may be talking to or dealing with is interested in it.
I can hear it in your fucking voice when you talk to people sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But
you're like, oh, yeah. And you'll ask a follow-up question. And I'm like, Kalu really doesn't care. It was like throwing a stick. Like,
no spoilers. None of that. But I'll look up things or whatever, or try to be knowledgeable of things that I'm not interested in, just to build that novelty status. So it's like, holy shit, that black guy knows NASCAR. You know, like, or
you would do some shit like it.
Because it, honestly, it helps. It really does help. And some things end up being kind of fun, you know, like hunting. I was totally doing the whole, you know, just building that token status on it. But when I started reading more about hunting and learning about hunting or the different tactics people use, all that kind of stuff, and the different animals and the meats and furs and this, that, and the other, I was like, holy shit, that's actually pretty interesting.
Well, yeah.
And so it just becomes another dumb part of me that fuck, I like. Man. Also, guns, another huge thing. At first, it was merely just like, just building on the tokenism part. Being like, oh, this big guy, black guy knows about like 40 cals and shot 40.
He's basically guns. Dirty Harry.
Exactly. He's, and like, it's, I actually use that in, to my advantage, one time I walked into a gun shop, and I can tell that it was kind of, he's kind of like, how is he, you know, in there? And so I came up there, I was like, I'm a Springfield guy, do you guys have the XD40 in there? And they were like, oh, no, but we can order one if you want one, you know what I mean? It was that, and so we started talking about the way that 40 caliber pistols fire, you know, the kickback, all this other stuff that we were going on about, and it was like, okay, I just use that, I'm his buddy now, I'm good. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you ever have anything like that, Brandon? Maybe well, like music or something like that?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you,
I can't. Like, I can't tell if he's about to say something.
No.
I'm looking really at
you. No, like he does.
No. You're about to say like
no. You're on a one way track to smack mouth. Is yeah. What's about to happen?
My boss tells me I'm going to mash your mouth. Like my hand is up right here. I'm about to mash your mouth and you say some dumb shit. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to tell about like
growing up. Mashing your mouth.
But no, growing up, like I mean. Being like one of the only black kids in like a primarily white school
sure
system, like, you know, they were all like, oh, so you like rap, and they try to come up to me and talk about all that stuff. I'm just like, I'm not going to be this token black kid.
I like
so,
Ben Folds.
So like, yeah, I started listening to rock music just so that way I could fit in with the
different
so
you
crowd.
Were sort of pushing away from it.
I was trying to push away from it.
Really? That's interesting.
Just because I didn't want to be that kid, because I had cousins who went to school who, you know, drove around with their systems blasting and their Cadillacs and stuff like that. I'm just like, I'm going to drive a red sports car.
Really?
Listen to rock music as loud as I can.
Huh.
Yeah.
That and sad. Did that give you any sort of social capital? Like, did it make you more popular or anything like that?
No, I was an in-betweener. So I was the type of kid who could just fit in with any crowd. Because, just like you, like, I knew a little bit about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Just to, like, spread my worth.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It is. It's a tactic that can be used. It absolutely is. I wish that we had, and we kind of, I was literally in Walmart when I called Chris and we started talking about doing something like tokenism or whatever. And so,
This is for real off the cuff. This is for real off the cuff. So, I mean, cut us a little slack, but not really. Like, shit on us if you need to.
Yeah, please, absolutely shit on us. I don't care.
As long as it's guys, Chris loves it.
Yeah,
guys,
Chris loves guys.
God, fecophilia is real out here.
But, is that what it's called?
I would imagine. I would deduce it is. The Latin derivation.
Google it.
Nope. Don't want to put forth the energy.
You got to do it. You remember that show? Yeah, I know. That's your job.
But Chris was telling me about this, and we didn't have any sort of time to grab a female in here, because I would really love to get just a female perspective on being one of the guys or whatever. So I thought that, you know, we can do it on a later time, but we'll give as much of a air quotes perspective as we can. And don't shit on us for not having a female in here.
I don't care if you do. I will lose zero sleep.
My intent is everything. We know what we're trying to do.
Yeah, like, I get all my news through Kalu. Like, if Kalu needs me to know something, he'll tell me. But
pretty much.
Well, man, somebody was kind of pissed off about what you said about oysters.
Yeah. We do have people that get mad about oysters, for real.
So, being considered, like, the token kid, did that raise your worth? Or did it, like, make you one of the good guys?
Yeah, I think that it did. In high school, and guys, I'm not horn tooting here or nothing. I was Mr. Freshman and Mr. Senior, you know. But
you're so tall that you just like sort of fit into both categories.
Yes, okay. Pretty much. Now it was something that I definitely used to my advantage, and I think that it did gain me a lot of friends. But it also gave people the notion that they can say whatever they wanted. And that part was something that I struggled with at first.
Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So, if I was
liquored up peripheral white friends?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what...
I've been to say something to a black fella I've always wanted to say to a black fella.
For a long time.
And he's going to respect me for it.
Yeah, it's just like... How come I can't say the N-word, but you can, you know? But no.
Riddle me this, Kyle.
Riddle me this, boy. I mean, you're my boy. We're just, you know.
We're just two fellas throwing out here.
Throwing out. That's so bad. But that shit happened, man. And I feel like that people do that to women, too. Like, you get that when you have the one person that's just one of the guys. You can just be like, all right, I've wanted to ask you something.
I'd be like, yo, my titties are sweating. Am I right?
Yeah. Or you feel like you have a pass to do certain sexual things because they're just one of the guys. You know what I mean?
Not me. Like,
no, yeah, I'm not pointing at Chris. No. I'm like,
some of you creep motherfuckers might know.
Yeah.
That might be your angle.
I feel like that's...
Because to be honest with you, I really don't have very many friends.
Yeah.
And then I don't have... a whole lot of really close female friends.
Sure.
It's just a complex thing, man.
Yeah.
But I just hate people in general is my thing. Like, I want to see all y'all do well. I swear to God. Every one of y'all. I want to see y'all do well. But y'all can kiss my ass.
But no. I think that there were things that were asked. And like those questions. Well, they'll say or ask something. And it's like... For me, I had to do some mental calculus to be like, okay, what is the intent of this question? If they truly want to learn, there's something that I am not doing right to where they feel like they have to be drunk to ask me this, right? And I think that that's sometimes where problems pop up. I think that it's like, I wish that you would have just asked me this when you weren't drinking.
Right.
It felt more.
But now you realize it just coincides with their narrative of what they want life to be, where they're the focal point. They're the protagonist. Yes. They're forthright.
Yeah.
They're taking risks. Mm-hmm. They're getting rewards. That kind of shit.
Yeah. And when that happened, again, I had to do that mental calculus there. But I don't think anything like super terrible resulted from it. I hope that the long talks that I've had with many people, you know, if we were all drunk or something like that, that it helped out and maybe they learned something. But yes, I do feel that when you are in a group and there is the token whatever, I think people tend to try and use it as a way to ask or say or do things that otherwise you wouldn't.
And let me just say, I've always been privy. Mm-hmm. I've always been third-party privy to exactly the thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Never been the one asked. Never been the one asking.
Yeah.
But I'll be there with my friends, and then one of our mutual white friends would be like, "Hey, let me ask you a question. You know you're my boy." And I'm like, "Here we go."
It's like, "Here it comes."
I know, and I'm like, "I gotta get out of here."
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very uncomfortable, Doug. Mm-hmm. That's me saying that from a third person perspective, because I have no dog in that fight other than just, yuck, bruh.
And again, it can be a positive or a negative thing. We have this with politics, you know. Everyone has that, maybe you do. That person that's your buddy, that is on the opposite political spectrum or whatever, and you feel like because you guys are friends or whatever, that they have that, or someone has some kind of political cap, or not political, social capital or whatever, to act a certain way within that group. And then you can ask that person questions that you normally wouldn't ask any random person on the opposite side of the spectrum of you. Does that make sense?
Possibly, yeah. But I think
you're like, possibly.
Well, I'm thinking like what you and I can speak on directly and who we interact with, because we don't shut other people out. That's our thing. Is like, I want it to be abundantly clear, even if people do think that I just like the sound of my own voice. I mean well, and I generally try to be sincere about my stuff, and it's coming from a place of love and sincerity, and not to be right.
Yeah, I think the right people can understand
that. Right, and I refuse to exclude people from that because I momentarily disagree with them on something, because people change. Mm-hmm. I mean, my viewpoints are subject to change. Other people's viewpoints are subject to change. And if you show people that you have that fundamental love and respect for them as a human being, it goes a long way. And I understand that it's a difficult thing to do that when you don't feel like you're being shown the fundamental love and respect that a human being is deserving of, you know, on a regular basis. I totally get that, 100%. But yeah, you and I don't shut people out.
Yeah, no.
And what's actually really funny is that you, myself, will say Brandon, Tyler Young, politically speaking, if you took great inventory of all of our political beliefs, they're way more similar than they are dissimilar.
Oh, yes.
But we really enjoy the places where we diverge. We really enjoy to terrorize one another about those differences.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to be said. There's camaraderie in arbitrarily ribbing one another about just ridiculous differences. Yeah. Things that mean nothing.
And I think, though, that there is a balance with doing things to build the camaraderie, and then having that release, if you will, of your backstage behavior, right? Like the people that are, they may be sexist.
And, oh, yeah.
And they have, you know, female friends, and then we're just part of the guys. I'm going to say and ask sexist things, and just sort of just to get that release.
And they they're lightweight, just making people tolerate them at that point.
Yes. So that is something that I was literally just thinking about.
And, that's a point that we need to probably drive home, is being aware that you are not making people just tolerate you.
Yes.
That's not a good place to reside. It's a much better place to be where you know that you're putting your best foot forward every step of the way.
Absolutely. Like I was just thinking of one friend who I kind of think that he's sexist, but he has,
you know,
like,
he is. If you saying that, you
man,
know he,
like,
is.
I can't tell, but I think he might
is.
Be.
This motherfucker is.
Yeah, I mean, when
y'all
he's
can inbox Kalu and ask who he is to Young Go Egg his house or whatever.
<Don't>. when he talks to women sometimes, and the things that he'll say, I'm just like, And they just kind of like laughed.
But
it
he
off.
Would never talk to a dude like that.
He would never talk to a dude like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. There's some dudes. There's some dudes.
That's a good point. He would never talk. He never talks to any of the guys like that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's some dudes that act like that they're super progressive that are in like the scene in Bowling Green, the who's who.
Yes.
Who's downtown in Bowling Green making moves and doing this and that. That will sniff a dude's throne and then talk real funky to a woman. What the fuck, yeah, man?
It's very it's crazy to think of that, and I want to.
And these are people that are trying to portray themselves as being like relatively enlightened individuals.
So who is the token person in that situation? Is it the women that are the women or men or blacks or whatever that associate with these people that fit this, you know, different narrative, or is it that person actually?
So you're talking about these. These
are you the token sexist that can be this? Are you the token racist that this?
Oh.
Or is that black guy your token black friend? Or is that woman your token female friend?
I think this dude that I'm thinking of is almost the token misogynist that the rest of the group tolerates.
Okay.
Like, yeah. He brings X, Y, and Z to the table. I mean, he's a handy dude with regard to a lot of things. And that's social capital, man. Absolutely. And that's social capital. If he didn't have all these handy elements to him and wasn't tapped into so much shit, I don't think it would be tolerated the same way.
But then I think that is the, in my opinion, that is the new age dumbass people.
It is. It sucks so bad.
It's the new age.
But that's why I walk around at work, and I think anybody that works with me will attest to this. I have tact.
Yeah.
But I will just tell you what the fuck is up. Like, I will look you right in the face. Mm-hmm. I told a coworker not too long ago in a discussion, a candid discussion, I love you, but I don't like you a lot of times.
That's funny.
And she was shocked, and I elaborated, and out of love, I explained everything that was meant, and I was just like, you know, I just don't feel like that we've been tight. Like, we haven't been clicking as friends, we haven't been working as a team, as coworkers and stuff, but at least I knew I put my best foot forward. Yeah. It wasn't that we were pretending to like each other or tolerating one another, because I never want that.
Yeah.
I want at least my shit to be aired out.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think, like I was going to say earlier, about like when I was younger and in high school, and maybe, no, it never really happened. Yes, in college it did happen, where it was like there was someone that would say stuff like, I'm not racist, and I like black guys. I just don't like the N-word.
Say
you know what I'm saying?
Say it.
Huh? Is there a way we can beep it out when I say it? Can we fit that in
just
you edit?
Just say it.
We're going to have to edit because I think Apple's going to just be like, oh, but I want to. You know, it's like, he's like,
no, it's, I mean,
I'm not racist.
Within an academic context, it really is. It's not gratuitous.
Okay, well, everyone knows what it is, so I don't even want to say it because now it just feels like, oh, say it, bro.
Quit being a bitch.
Should you say it?
Collusion. I feel yucky about the word now. Now you're making me say it.
I know, but I've had that happen before. And I've lived very closely with one. And this guy was my roommate, you know, and it was just like, holy crap, you know.
He just liked dropping the M-bomb gratuitously?
Yeah, he kind of did.
With the hard R?
Yeah, with the hard R.
Was he like, he just used it as derogatory, and it wasn't even directed towards black people. He just used it gratuitously.
And
That's the worst one. I couldn't tell. Did he have a neck beard?
Huh? No, he didn't have a neck.
Did he play PC?
He played
PC games, didn't he?
No. Those are some of the gamers on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That.
Anyway.
I'm being prejudiced.
Yeah, now you are.
I'm so sorry.
But that kind of stuff is what I think of. And when I see, like, I've seen people, like, guys use the C word, you know, referring to women. And
Cuddle Bunny.
Cuddle Bunny. It's this. Don't, Brandon, I saw your face.
Brandon almost
no.
Said,
Brandon I was, almost said it.
You know I did that so he would say some shit.
I was going to say Care Bears, and you took it.
But, yes, that word. And it's just like, damn, dude.
But if you go to, like, England or Australia, that's a part of the normal vernacular, man.
And what context is
obviously different. Context. And I will always fight. Let me just say. I will always fight for the attempt.
Yes.
When it comes to a joke. And that's a Patrice O'Neill quote. Mm-hmm. I love Patrice O'Neill. If you explore his work, overwhelmingly, it has a lot of really racial and misogynistic undertones to it, but it's meant to deliberately assail. That's what its intended purpose is for everybody to be like, I cannot believe that motherfucker said that. Mm-hmm. It's not to be taken as, oh, this is a direct attack against me. It's an attack against your sensibilities.
Yes.
And that's what needs to be understood. So mm-hmm. I will always fight for the fucking attempt.
Yeah.
Whether
yeah.
it be for Patrice O'Neill, George Carlin was in the same camp, mm-hmm. even though he wasn't as ferocious about it as Patrice O'Neill was. But for a time, Richard Pryor yeah. was very big on, you know, say what the fuck you mean. Now, he wasn't big on the N-word, obviously. Yeah. But Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle changed the game for a lot of people because it was used on just national television all the time.
It was. And then here we go with one of the reasons why he said he stepped away is because he felt like some of the things that he was creating, although were being enjoyed by just so many people, were reinforcing negative
stereotypes.
Stereotypes, yeah. which coincide directly with that tokenistic stuff.
Yes.
Think about, and again, this isn't an attack on white people at all, but all the drunk white frat dudes running around going, I'm Rick James, bitch.
Yeah.
Shit like that, nonstop. That was a dark time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a, for real a dark
time. It was fun.
It was fun. It was really fun. But he did open the door for, yeah. and it coincided with
yes.
a lot of what I'm talking about with these white dudes that didn't mean anything by it, so yeah. to speak, but gratuitously was just saying shit to mm-hmm. be saying it.
When do you think is, I think I just answered my, there's never really a right time, but what happens in someone's head where they feel like it's the right time? Is it just the conditioning, or is it just the heat of the moment? If you're with your buddies or whatever,
there are two things that I can, if I'm like trying to put myself in that position, I could fathom. Mm-hmm. One is the self-centered. I am, you know, the center character in my own little narrative that I've created. The other one is let me see how far I can go with this human being, and not even in a negative way. Let me see if my relationship with this human being transcends this social moray.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's probably a more likely thing.
Yeah.
The other one is an assumption of something a lot darker, and maybe they both can go on at the same time, but I think some of it is dipping your toe. Well, that's jumping in waist deep pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, testing your relationship and seeing if, hey, is your view of me and vice versa bigger than this word?
Yeah.
To them. Maybe that's what they're fucking thinking.
Oh, that's interesting. Say that again. Is your view of me bigger than the word that I just used?
Yeah. Is my view of you and vice versa
yeah.
bigger than that particular fucking word? You know what's word?
Crazy? That can transcend into acts in the age of Me Too, where people are coming out and they're coming forward and talking about things that were done with, in some cases, the people are being like, oh, I thought it was okay. I thought it was something harmless. I do my air quotes, right?
Yeah, and they don't realize that they have taken advantage of another human being. They've cornered you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is you have been it, no matter how you take it, you still are having to take it.
Yeah.
You have been accosted in some way. And I know none of us in this room are hyper diligent or easily upset by yeah. words by mm-hmm. any means, but it's an entirely different thing to acknowledge that was something like that as you being accosted.
Yeah.
And so not to equate them, because I don't think they're equitable. Mm-hmm. They're just, they have similarities.
Yeah. Oh, you're saying something versus doing something.
No, I'm saying like, you being
someone's best buddy or whatever.
And because the context of being a big black friend.
Yeah.
And then also within the context of somebody being female
yes.
and their friendship.
And it's like, we've been friends.
Yes.
I know you.
There you go. And then
it's okay.
And then also if you have an elevated social position over them as well.
Yeah.
Like a boss in a job getting too comfortable with you and like progressively saying some stuff like ribbing you about being black.
You know,
some
man,
shit.
That's. That hasn't happened to me, but I've seen that happen in workplaces where a boss will just say like talk reckless
Oh yeah.
To an employee, like just reckless to him.
It's probably me.
It's not you, Brandon. It's not you.
You're Brandon, Brandon hits his employees.
Yeah, he does punch him. I actually saw him roundhouse kick one of his employees.
What did you drop?
Yeah, exactly. You got that fat commission. I brought him into the evil world of commission. Now everyone's a dollar sign. It's bad. That's cool. It's bad.
Come see me, money.
I know, right? But again, I was thinking of just so many different groups of people that kind of use that. And going back on what I was saying, it's like, oh, they're my buddy. I've known him for this long. We joke around. Then this is okay. And then when it's not, it's just like, holy crap.
Well, and it's kind of, a lot of that is the overestimation of your position.
Would you say the overestimation is on both parts?
Well, and check it out, like an, yes. But okay. I'm thinking about like Louis C.K.
Okay.
For example, and this is some dangerous waters to be treading upon. Yeah. But let me just say, with Louis C.K., even though you could say that they're
time out. I'm trying to drink mango juice, and
I'm trying to save your life with mango juice.
It tastes like I'm drinking snot.
Well, look, Kalu come over here thinking that we got mango drink, and it's not the fucking case.
I thought it was mango drink.
No, I squozed that from the mango's bosom directly.
God. Anyway, time in.
Kalu don't appreciate shit.
I don't.
But, like, Louis C.K., for example, even though you had a litany of people coming and saying, well, I don't give a fuck what they think, trying to discredit the women as a defense, first of all, and why didn't they say this before? And he asked them and all this shit. Yes. Okay. Even if there was consent, implied, granted, whatever you want to fucking call it, even if that is part of the equation, he still utilized both his social position and that relationship to accost another individual.
Sure.
And I know that, again, I would, and I can't attest to where you're at with it, but me personally, when I've been cornered about things that are a little bit uncomfortable with regard to my race or ethnicity or something like that, it doesn't bother me as much as I could ever imagine something like the Louis C.K. situation bothering me.
Yeah.
And being absolutely detrimental to my well-being moving forward and trusting other people within that context.
It's one of those hard balancing acts for groups of people, man. It really is.
Well, when you've been cornered in that context, has it ever made you feel like, well, do all white people think this way, and then this motherfucker just decided to get brave with it, or has that thought ever crossed your mind?
No, I don't think so. And again, because I exercise extreme ownership, even back then. I didn't do it as much as I do it now, but even back then, when I think about it, it's like, I should have, it's on me that I didn't set the boundaries.
That you didn't, okay, and that's fair. Yeah, that is fair.
I should have set the boundaries right there, because I think that person would have respected that, and some days, maybe it's fine to just be ignorant to something. Like, I would sometimes rather be ignorant to the knowledge, or ignorant to the fact that someone is racist. I'd rather think that they're just one way and not ever have to deal with this other part of them, and they just be that way at home.
Okay.
In some cases, I'm sorry to keep cutting
off. No.
In some cases, it's fine, but in other cases, I'm like, show your fucking mask. Let me see who you are.
Well, no,
you
know? I actually take your mask off. I overwhelmingly prefer bigots and misogynists to be out and open about it. I mean, I'm overwhelmingly in favor of everybody just saying what the fuck they mean about stuff. Yeah.
Thinking about it, I would say now. I am, yes.
But I will say what you said holds a lot of merit. And that comes down to the individual. That's up to the individual who has been accosted, whether they are capable or willing to take ownership of whatever role they played in not stepping up and being like, hey, motherfucker, no, this is not okay.
Yeah.
That's up to them. I think as a society, though, a third party on the outside looking in, I think in no way can any of us looking at that situation from afar place ownership on the person accosted, though, regardless.
Yeah.
I think that ownership has to be personal. I think they have to do it themselves. Oh, yeah.
You can't place ownership.
Yeah, and it's up to yes, absolutely. So
because you fall into that whole mindset, it's victim blaming, dude. It's victim blaming, and that's fucked up.
But I think that there is room in this paradigm, like you were saying, of extreme ownership to make acknowledgments. But that's a dangerous place to tread with regard to like certain things, like we were talking about, like sexual assault and stuff, because victims already inherently kind of feel devalued and want to blame themselves and shit about stuff anyway. And I can't attest to how that might even begin to feel.
But when you think about it, too. When you are, yes, when you become the victim or when you realize that you were a victim, there is that sense of devaluation that happens. But in the same sense, when you are the token person, or if you're one of the good ones, being the girl that the guys love hanging out with, or the black guy that everyone loves hanging out with and can speak freely or whatever, you tend to have a sense of, maybe you over-evaluate or something like that yourself, right? You think that you have a higher value because you're one of the good ones.
So your perception of your novel status.
Yes.
Because that I guess there's a lot.
I have
there's
a perception of my novel status, and I use it to my advantage.
Right. Okay.
And maybe that's not a good thing. Because you can wind up in a situation where people do get too comfortable.
And you've overestimated
yourself and what you actually do and don't like and do and don't tolerate or whatever, and you've overestimated the other people.
Okay. But like I said, it's as far as third party shit, and I think this is an interesting element to kind of touch on, is there is going to always be an element of ownership that somebody can take hold of in these types of situations. But when you're talking about society at large, the law enforcement, the judicial system, whatever you want to call it, we can't say anything about personal ownership. It always has to be about just what the net effect, the person that did the accosting did to the accosted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a clear distinction to draw, that just because we make room, like, again, because we've been victims of our own things, not specifically that shit, but we've been victims of our own things, and we've then taken ownership of them. But fuck, man, that's a difficult thing for people to even articulate, I think. And I think a lot of people have tried, and it just really comes off as though they are trying to put the onus on the victim.
Yeah.
And that's not it. You can never, ever, third party, put the onus on the victim. The victim can only take inventory and parse out what they believe that they should take ownership of.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, have you ever dealt with anything like that? Like, go ahead.
Like what? Explain.
So
shorter, though.
Yeah. He said, explain shorter though. I'm saying like being or overestimating your social capital or because you were the token person.
Have you ever been in a field in Butler County and heard, woo! And oh my been God. Freaked out?
No. No, I never have. But I mean, you know, growing up, I grew up around a lot of country people.
Sure.
So there we are. Uh-huh. But I grew up around a lot of country people. So like I would go out into, you know, Jetson or someplace like way out, like you guys would never travel at night. But because I had a lot of friends out there. So I mean they had a lot of questions, but like I didn't
Now that we're out here in the woods, Brandon.
But see, and I'm always really cool, calm, and collective. Like I don't speak like a lot of people would perceive me to, just because, you know, I worked hard on that. I was like, I'm not going to have that appearance.
I don't know. When I saw you, I was like,
I bet he's really loud.
That's how he's. I bet he talks exactly like you actually talk.
Yeah. No, that's true.
I get a lot. They're just like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Morgantown, Kentucky. They're like, where are you originally from?
Yeah.
From like California or something? I'm like, no, I just like to
enunciate. I'm from a little place between the Tigris and Euphrates River. They would believe that shit, too. They'd be like, oh my God, he's so exotic.
Oh my Lord. But do you think that could have been and this is, we can save this for like a race talk, because I think we're kind of going in there. But again, you said that you lived your life to try to not be like that. Do you think that has hurt your relationship with other African Americans?
I mean, I just became myself, so I mean, I can talk to whoever comes around me. I mean, yeah, I don't know all the handshakes and stuff. I mean, they're...
Oh my God.
God!
Holy shit. Dude,
look, I don't know how to take it. I don't know. Just said, I feel like Brandon just offended like a quarter of my ancestors.
Said you don't... Oh, man. Brandon, you've been gone too long.
I've been gone way too
you've
long.
You've been gone too long. Come back home, Brandon. Come back home. Oh my Lord. I've never heard that from another black person that talks like me. Like, I don't know the handshake. Dude, I don't know what's happening
this
right
is
now.
My favorite shit ever.
Brandon, I wouldn't expect that out of you.
Here we go. What do you say about Kalu?
What do you say about Kalu, the colored boy that you run this podcast with? Like, what do you think about him?
He thinks he's so fucking smart.
We shake hands normally, though.
Oh my God.
He said normally.
No, I mean, it's
we don't give each other dap.
And we don't do the dap thing. But truthfully, in all seriousness, it's crazy to...
Brandon's going to have to fight some people.
Yeah, now. He might. To think that someone... That another black person has really thought that. Like, it's... Like, I don't know the handshakes. Because you're operating... And I'm being serious. You're operating under the assumption that black people do have, like, a handshake. There's one handshake that every black person knows.
Okay.
And
even you lock it in. You pull, you,
yes.
Then you lock your thumbs, right?
Then you go the fingers, yep. And then you bring it in for a hug. And then sometimes when you separate, you snap.
But how do you know when to hug or not? How do
you know when to hug or not? You come in like this. No, I mean, yeah, you could. Damn, what was that?
That's flavor, baby.
You do the normal one. He had some wiggle. Like this, this, and then you snap. Easy, easy. I'm sorry, I just knocked the mic away.
Yeah, but we're getting wily around here.
I know, that's...
Kalu's doing to keep it shuffle.
No, I'm just like... He said do it blacker. I'm really shocked. I just never.
He said,
knew.
Do it blacker.
No, yeah. And so, okay, so I'll say this. Do you think that maybe it could have built or increased your social capital if you knew to code switch?
No, I mean, I in all seriousness, I did code switch a lot.
Okay.
And especially, I mean, whenever I went to UK, completely different experience because, I mean, I moved out of this all white, primarily white town to diversity.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
I absolutely love this.
So you lost your token status, do you think? He was like, no, I still got green eyes.
I was a little bit different, but it's cool.
Yeah.
Every time I went back, I mean, people still love me. I mean, I worked at a gas station, so I had customers of all sorts of different backgrounds coming in, and they just wanted to talk to me. And like, my family grew up right down the road, so they were like, I know your grandpa, I know this. We didn't shake hands,
yeah.
So I don't understand. But no, I mean, I never felt like I was being the token, I just wanted to like broaden people's experiences. I just wanted them to see, you know, we're not all like what you see on the TV,
yeah.
Like, I'm just like you, I'm a human being, I accept everyone, so I feel like I want to educate them,
really accept
but I'm not going to like jump on them for
saying. Brandon is nicer than we are.
Well, nice. What do you do when someone does something wrong or what you feel is wrong? You just kind of let it go.
You poke.
Well, define wrong.
Poke him in the
eye.
I don't know what's wrong for you.
You're gonna be you, and he's gonna be him. And
well, I'm what's wrong like, for you? What is something that you would say is crossing the line for you?
Well, I mean, I don't like being called the N-word, but I mean.
Hard R or A?
Hard R, never.
Okay, A is okay? That should be a thing. A is okay. Hard R if you want to get your ass whooped.
Well, that's the thing. And overwhelmingly, I've heard people say, like me personally, I don't give a fuck, but like I can't co-sign for another motherfucker to say it.
I tell all my friends that. I'm just like, look, if it comes up, we're singing rap music or something like that, if we're just whatever. Because I do have some friends that we can say whatever to each other, right? But they all know, like, look, if you slip up in public and someone wants to beat the brakes off of you, I will not do anything because you should have known better.
Yeah, you can't do that shit, man.
You should have known better.
No, you can't.
But I also think now it's like, is this giving them that pass to, well, I don't have friends like that where it's that pass. I just don't have.
And that's the thing. I don't associate with people that are at risk for doing shit like that. Yeah,
that's a good term, at risk.
And even if I did, they would be very fringe on it.
Yes.
So they would have had to have just really stepped on their dick, so to speak, when it came to that stuff. So the person that was assailed by it, it's really up to them to be a decent human being at that point and not just be like, oh, I'm ready to kill someone tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for an excuse to beat your ass to death. But everything, again, it's bound by context.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, it's a God. That's really crazy when I think about it. I hope that all the people that I associate with now wouldn't say something terrible like that, right?
I don't know, Cole. You hang out with some sketchy motherfuckers.
Those are nice guys. Paul with the glutes.
Paul with the glutes.
He likes everyone.
Well. Everyone likes Paul with the glutes, but he still lets the hard R slip every once in a while. You think so?
When he gets mad at
him. Not in mixed company, though.
Right? He just keeps it to his
close buddies.
Yeah,
when he's in the kitchen, he'll whisper it. Martha, this pie is delicious,
but
Clue needs to go.
I don't like his skin.
We seriously should have had Josh on for this episode. Like, growing up Hispanic in a town just like I did, but he grew up out in the country with them. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Way different life experiences.
No, so, okay. I'm trying to... What other directions can we go? Where are we on time?
You're at 55.
Oh, nice, dude. Phew. This thing is going to flew, dude.
Do nothing, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so...
You can just make up shit.
I'd love for us to really expand on this discussion with a more diverse group of people. Because I do think that there are... Obviously, we gave a couple of examples of what it means to be one of the good ones. It's just also in another setting called one of the guys. Or if you're in another setting, one of the girls. Well, because I've seen girls that have like that one gay guy or that one straight guy or whatever you want to call it that is in that group of friends. And it's like they almost get allowances to say certain things or whatever. Yeah. And it's almost, this is different too. It's almost like, because I've seen this happen where... There's almost this expectation that that guy, especially if it was a gay guy, cannot or should not be offended because he's a man, right?
Yeah, that's a difficult point of contention about whether one status supersedes the other as far as like if somebody's offending someone else deliberately.
Yeah, but I've seen in the cases where females have called their gay friend a that, you know, the F word, the word you don't call a gay person. That's right?
Fucked up, Kalu.
I know. I've seen it though, and he's just like, ha, ha, ha. You know, like that's. I don't even mean to be.
Damn, that's even more fucked up. That's about as bad as what Brandon did.
I was just doing. I was doing that. God, I hate you guys. We're gonna lose so many friends.
No, but what I find interesting is. It seems like we diverged and went down some other paths that weren't...
Sure, yeah.
But what I'm finding is whenever you start with these core concepts and you begin to unpack them, once you begin unpacking things, then you find other concepts inside of it. Yeah. Like, that's really where all this stuff's coming from.
I think
from.
The root for this is one of the...
Yes! So and that's...
One of the good ones. One of the guys.
One of the fucking good ones. And so when we talk about like novel status and tokenism, that is going to be intrinsically linked to patriarchy, misogyny, racism, prejudice, all these other factors that come into play.
Yes.
So it does. It seems like we've diverged way down a path, but really we're just unpacking shit, man.
Yeah. Again... Thinking of the...
And we don't have a female to help us unpack shit.
Truthfully, we're kind of looking for one that's like more like regular with us. You know what I'm saying? Who can really hang with all of us.
We should have had Ashley on.
Huh? We should have had Ashley on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it would be nice to have that other view, especially as we get into more and more topics that other people can provide different perspectives. I think it would be something good to have... Just something more constant as far as a personality coming on. But I think I was saying before we started cutting up, the root word or phrase is one of the guys, one of the good ones, anything like that. And yes, like you were saying, there sits an even deeper part where it's the misogyny, if it's racism, if it's all these other things, those all really, really play a huge part in how we sort of navigate that whole phrase. And I think that we can go in multiple directions with this. We totally could. Because there ultimately does wind up a victim. Because sometimes the joking gets too much. Or sometimes the acts or whatever get too much. And there'll be some of the locker room antics that kind of happen, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, and it opens the door for, like, outs for people to make excuses on one end and make themselves vulnerable on another end. Like, there'll be one person being like, oh, you know, we were just horsing around. Mm-hmm. It's a dangerous place to fucking tread.
Yeah, when their position changes within that group, I think the entire dynamic changes. So now I'm thinking of the girl that was one of the guys that ends up starting to date one of the guys. Just seeing the dynamics of those friendships and all that kind of stuff that work in there. I think there is a change because that person gets, if you want to call it, elevated status or whatever, where it's like where
they went from friend to significant other. So then that dynamic shifts. Yes. It's two people making decisions as one.
As one. And you're no longer one of the guys right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's an interesting thing to bring
up. I think that there is and I've seen groups of friends fall apart because something like that happens. Where the girl that was one of the guys starts dating one of the guys. And then it's like, well, she's no longer one of the guys. It's like, oh, I kind of want them to not really be in the group and just fit this role as the guy's girlfriend. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's one thing that we can obviously talk about on another episode. But do we have any shout-outs or anything? I've got a few. But.
Shout-out to...
we can't say Rome. I would love a club sandwich.
Devontae, yeah.
How did he do?
He got fourth in the world.
What?
Yeah, he's the number four man in the entire fucking world in Moss Wrestling.
That's really cool. So I actually watched a couple of videos. When I was showing you guys all the different team pictures.
Yeah, and he grabs the... I don't know what it's called. The flugel stick, whatever it is, man. But he just... ferociously grabbed that motherfucker. And he's the nicest dude in the world. Yeah. Like, he's just like... you talk to him, he's just super gracious. But he is a monster athlete. Like,
that's cool.
To be as thick and heavy duty as he is, he does some mean, like, calisthenic work. Like, pull-ups and dips and all that kind of shit. I'm sure he can probably do muscle-ups. Hell, I don't know.
Good God.
I know. But shout-out to Devontae Muscle Man Montgomery, number four in the world in Moss Wrestling. Shout-out to Tyler Young, dialing it in for Worlds. Mm-hmm. He's going to compete at, what is it, 176 pounds?
Is that what he's going for? I knew he hit 185 just the other day.
Yeah, I think it's to 176 is the...
Golly, that's impressive.
It is, man. He weighs... but I weigh pretty much right now. I know.
I want to give a shout out to Oxology Labs.
He's stronger than I am, and it pisses me off.
To Oxology Labs for providing us with incredible workout supplements. We now have Russell. He bought some from our thankful episode. That's what's up. He got some, and I saw him at the gym. He was ready to fight a planet, and he was just like, "I feel good. Look, I feel really good."
You know, Tyler talked to me, and his one gripe is when he was going to do deadlifts.
Uh-huh.
He got such a lower back pump from doing the deadlifts that it messed with his mobility again. Yeah. But this is more a bodybuilding supplement. Yes. I mean, it functions in the powerlifting capacity as well, especially if you're doing squats or bench press. But I could see how your lower back swelling and filling up with blood could be a little bit shocking. Mm-hmm. But that just shows how absolutely potent this stuff is.
It's really good stuff. I'm a huge fan of it. So, shout out to Oxology Lab. It's CEO_AUXOLOGY. Hit him up. CEO_Oxology Labs. Go to his website. Purchase his stuff. And use our promo code on there. That is Salumis10, all caps. You'll get 10% off your order. I want to give another shout out to Bartley Weaver. And that's at DreamweaverFit. Hit him up for workout plans, all that good stuff. He's got good inspirational stuff that can really help you on your fitness journey. Super knowledgeable guy. We had a blast with him on our episode. Thank you so much for jumping on. I also want to give a shout out to my boy Josh Biggs. He is the owner of Fuel Nutrition. That's going to be opening up soon, and he will be on not this next episode. No, he will be on the next episode for next Sunday. That's going to be part two of the Moore series. He's got some really interesting stuff to talk about. And then we're also going to just pick his brain about being a business owner and having a fitness supplement or a fitness company where they are doing a lot of, they're going to be doing a lot of great things for the community and to really better people's health and help people make better diet decisions and stuff like that. So very, very excited for him and all the cool stuff that he's going to be able to do. Brandon, do you have any shout-outs?
Shout out DJ Rios on That's My Jam.
Okay.
I was actually on their podcast this week.
Oh, yeah, you did one? Yeah, I couldn't make that one, unfortunately. So,
check it out. See what my favorite song is, my all-time jam and all that.
Ooh, spoiler,
He's got a lot of good stuff going on. He's
spoil it right now. Spoil it. What's your favorite? No, don't spoil it.
No.
Oh, okay, good. I thought he was about to spoil it. I was like, really, really don't. That's fucked up.
No, no. Check him out on Instagram, Twitter. Okay.
He's on Apple, iTunes, and everything like that.
iTunes, all that.
Guys, we now have a donation page. We want to be able to make ourselves better. We're all putting in our own money to make this a good product. We want to do a lot more. We want to do more in the community. We want to upgrade our equipment even more and just get ourselves to a point where we're really giving you a product that we know that you will love and have a good time listening to. But if you go on, it's thisalumis.com/donate, or you can just go to our website and just you'll see a link up at the top. We can't do increments less than $3.50 like the donation company we're using. They're using this method to, what's the word opposite? Is it dissuade the scammers and credit card people from taking stuff? So a lot of times they will do in increments of like 50 cents or a dollar to see if a card is valid. So they've changed that. They upped that amount. So $5 would be great. You know, we have different tiers for the things that you do if you donate to us. A lot of them involve Brandon dancing for you. And we will shout you out no matter the amount. Just we'll shout you out because, guys, we really appreciate the things that you guys have said for us or said about us or anything like that and all the feedback that has helped make us get better. Did you say you had any others, Brandon?
Oh, that's all I have right now.
You're good here?
Shout outs to Chris Jones and Bryce Wood in Glasgow, Kentucky. Again, if you're in the Glasgow area and you're checking us out, you have any questions, you know either of those gentlemen, get with them. They're pretty well known in the community, well thought of, and knowledgeable with regard to our ethos and things we might be interested in helping out with in the community.
Sweet, sweet.
Oh, and then also February 19th, The Salumist is going to be showing up at Sloan Convention Center from 5 to 8 for Empty Bowls and volunteering there. So if you're interested in lending a hand during that time, I'm sure we can find somewhere for you.
Yeah, and we will be serving soup. Yeah. Will we be carrying the...
Yeah, you and I will be, again, we'll be the pack animals when it comes to the soups. Because it's just quicker a lot of times for you to just run the whole cauldron of soup out instead of, like, putting it on a cart and...
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys, thank you all so much for listening to our episode. We love you so much, 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 much. It's just, it's been a crazy.
Y'all all right?
No, I really do, man. We're getting close to a year y'all doing cool, this, man. I guess. So it's just so neat the amount of support that we've been getting from people and how much that we've improved. So it's cool being able to like go somewhere and someone has something to say about it. I've recently received some really good feedback from one of my old friends, and it's just crazy. I didn't even think that he listened to it, you know, and it was just cool reading what he said, and it really meant a lot. And it really makes me and the rest of the team makes us want to double down and try to make sure that we're saying and doing the right things to really make an impact on someone's life. So thank you all for paying attention. And I think we are out.